Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
If we lose this cultural war, we're going to have a hedonistic, humanistic society.
Discover the story of the culture warrior, Don Wildman, and how he went head-to-head with Hollywood, Playboy, the homosexual agenda, and the Disney empire. The movement Don started paved the way for Christians to boldly stand for truth and righteousness in a hostile culture. Watch Culture Warrior today for free. Visit culturewarrior.movie.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is July 23rd, and treason is on the menu this morning as the revelations from DNI Tulsi Gabbard that she has sent criminal referrals to the DOJ related to the report released on Friday that asserted that Obama officials engaged in, quote, a treasonous conspiracy. President Trump addressed the issue from the Oval Office yesterday morning during his meeting with the Philippines president, clearly angry, according to The Hill's summary, at the targeting of him by President Obama and his national security team, as alleged in the report. So The Hill said this: President Trump on Tuesday said that former President Obama should be targeted directly by the Department of Justice after his administration's report alleged Obama administration officials manipulated intelligence related to Russian interference in the 2016 election. So the DNI, of course, Tulsi Gabbard, has sent those criminal referrals to the DOJ related to the report released last week that asserted Obama officials engaged in a, quote, treasonous conspiracy. When asked in the Oval Office on Tuesday, during that visit with the Philippines president, about whom the DOJ should target, Trump pointed to Obama. Quote, based on what I read, and I pretty much read what you read, it would be President Obama. He started it, Trump said. And then Vice President Joe Biden was there with him, and former FBI Director James Comey was there, and former DNI Director James Clapper, and the whole group was there. Former CIA Director John Brennan, they were all there in the room right here. This was the room. He added, if you look at those papers, they have him stone cold, and it was President Obama. It wasn't lots of people all over the place. It was them too, but the leader of the gang was President Obama, Barack Hussein Obama. Have you heard of him? He's guilty, not a question. So former President Obama actually issued a statement in response to this yesterday, which was kind of surprising to me, but he said this, quote, out of respect for the office of the presidency, our office does not normally dignify the constant nonsense and misinformation flowing out of this White House with a response. But these claims are outrageous enough to merit one. These bizarre allegations are ridiculous and a weak attempt at distraction. Nothing in the document issued last week undercuts the widely accepted conclusion that Russia worked to influence the 2016 presidential election, but did not successfully manipulate any votes. These findings were affirmed in a 2020 report by the bipartisan Senate Intelligence Committee led by then Chairman Marco Rubio, unquote. So DNI Tulsi Gabbard, of course, then went on media, including Fox News, Newsmax, and shot back at the Obama claim. This is what she had to say on Newsmax. Cut three.
We will be releasing further documents tomorrow that will refute that statement. And I would go back and point to, and we will be pulling a whole host of statements that were made by the Obama administration, by Hillary Clinton, by senior Democrat officials, by their friends in the media that state over and over again, after this January 2017 manufactured intelligence document was created, that repeat the narrative. And I'm looking at my notes here. New York Times says Russian hackers acted to aid Trump in the election. CIA's, Obama's CIA Director John Brennan says there is strong consensus among us to support the CIA claim Russian hackers aided Donald Trump's election. Hillary Clinton said, "I would be president if not for the Russian hackers supporting Donald Trump." So there is a vast body of evidence and intelligence that debunks and refutes this statement you've just read and others coming from some of the Democrat leaders in Congress today.
So that was DNI Tulsi Gabbard. They're responding to the Obama statement. So let's welcome in Scott Uhlinger, who's a former CIA officer. And Scott, really glad to have you back. And, you know, what do you make of all this? And I mean, I think that obviously there's the political conclusions where the people who, you know, love President Trump and frankly hate Obama would love to see him led away in handcuffs and have a mugshot similar to Trump's. And then, of course, the Democrats are just calling this all a hoax and a distraction like Obama's statement. But where do you think the truth of the matter lies?
Well, certainly the DNI has got it nailed. What we're looking at is massive illegality, and Trump is not using any kind of hyperbole by talking about that it's treason, because it is. He's just one of the few people who has like the moral courage to call it out for what it actually is. And that was actually a smart move on his part, because he knows that the mainstream media will, which of course made this entire thing possible, because they enabled the U.S. intelligence and the FBI and stuff to propagate these lies. It was the mainstream media that was a primary conspirator. They, by start talking about this on kind of the world stage with the president of the Philippines, it sort of compels the mainstream media to cover this, because believe me, they would rather ignore this. They're already starting to backtrack that they were not propagating the Russiagate lie. And as somebody who's written about this stuff for at least 7 years, I wrote articles about the Steele dossier when it came out, saying it was garbage, and any intel officer could tell it was garbage. It's nice to see that finally the official word is that, in fact, I was correct about all these lies that were being propagated with Russiagate, starting with Hillary, going all the way through Obama.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a wild story that clearly the Steele dossier has been thoroughly debunked. We've seen, you know, the truth of that come out in reports like yours and others. And so do you think that we are finally going to see accountability, though, or is this report and this referral to the DOJ just kind of a media splash to maybe give Trump some PR cover, but it's not going to ultimately end in actual justice?
Right. That is really the $64,000 question. I tend to think I kind of take a moderate approach on this. I really think that Trump's dramatic announcement and such indicates that they plan on following through with this much more than some people would have. And I also believe that there will be some people put in prison. It's clear that the base, that the MAGA base and most Americans are, having seen all the revelations of Doge and these revelations, the continued corruption of the U.S. government, people want accountability, including myself. I've always said that, you know, people want to see people in jail by, let's say, September, some people, a couple, to show that the wheels of justice are turning. So I think that will happen. Now, whether someone like Obama is going to be put in jail, I kind of doubt that. I mean, that would be very good. I'd love to be proven wrong on that. But I think that people like Comey, Clapper, and Brennan have to really worry. And those are the people I really want to see go to jail. They are just incredible villains, and they may have done what Obama told them to do, but the fact that they were willing to disregard their constitutional oath is contemptible. They are beneath my contempt. John Brennan, the CIA director, personally tried to mess me up as I was departing the agency, even though, of course, I didn't know him. But as somebody who was a critic of Obama, he wanted to erase me. So there is some personal enmity there. But I think that they really have the goods on these guys, and they're going to be severely punished, much as they deserve.
Yeah, and I agree with you that, you know, this shouldn't be about politics. Like, obviously, what they did was all about politics. This is where the Department of Justice, if they're truly acting as the Department of Justice, should simply go where the evidence leads and not treat Obama or any of these other former officials as anything more or less than ordinary U.S. citizens, because that's the type of respect and process that they deserve. But they don't deserve any kind of heightened protection just because, you know, Obama is a former president. I mean, you know, look at what the left was willing to do with then former President Trump in terms of, you know, all the ridiculous lawfare and, you know, going through that totally sham trial in New York, you know, among other places. And so this is an opportunity, I think, to restore some credibility to the Department of Justice, even if the left's narrative is, well, you know, you're only going after your political opponents. Well, no, you can't treat your political opponents as somehow given more protection just because they happen to be your political opponents, because they're not really the political opponents of Pam Bondi, you know, the Attorney General, or the Department of Justice. So, you know, this should start with an investigation. Maybe we'll see some target letters, you know, then come out of it. But I would hope that within the next 3.5 years of the Trump DOJ, we'll see some indictments.
That's right. I think that something to keep in mind with someone like Obama is, you know, these people, these sociopaths are incredibly prideful and arrogant. And so the old expression, the process is the punishment, applies here. So I draw satisfaction from the fact that although Obama may not wind up in jail, heck, he might not even wind up on trial, the fact that Donald Trump is talking about his treasonous behavior, the fact that his name is going to be continued to be brought up in various legal proceedings, if not against him directly, means that his name, his quote legacy, unquote, will be destroyed. And that is what that monster, what that treasonous individual, that's what matters to him the most. So even so, as they say, the process is the punishment. Going through the legal process, even if you're found not guilty, is devastating to one's reputation. And in fact, the Democrats have capitalized on that by jailing January 6th protesters, et cetera. Well, now the shoe is on the other foot, and he can watch his reputation go down into the absolute basement, even with his own base. Already there are people predicting that even if Obama were brought to trial, it's not like American cities would rise up and burn for like weeks on end. There may be a little problem for 2 weeks or so, but after that, people have moved on. He's yesterday's news. He's like a Bill Clinton. No one cares about him anymore. And even Democrats in their heart of hearts kind of sense that he was not good for anybody. He was an agitator and made the country a lot worse having served as our president.
Yes, very, very well said. And I'm no stranger, of course, to the process being the punishment. And, you know, I feel for you as well. I didn't know that this was personal for you. So I hope that there is some measure of personal justice as you see this process play out. Scott Uhlinger. And before we let you go, I wanted to ask you about one other story. The Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth is now back in the news. This is the headline from Yahoo. Hegseth abandoned by aides as Pentagon left in turmoil. I think that's a little bit of an overstatement, but, you know, hey, it's Yahoo. But Justin Fulcher, who is a top aide to Pete Hegseth, has left the Pentagon. And apparently this is the sixth senior aide in as many months for the defense secretary. Is there anything to this story, or is this just kind of regular ebb and flow with these kinds of positions?
Well, I think it does sound like that there are perhaps a few more people than normal leaving, but this is something that I want to see some improvement on in the Trump administration, because what I've been seeing is that President Trump is, you know, I think Hegseth has done a good job, but the Trump definitely favors appointing sort of social media influencers into positions, which is fine. But the important thing is when those people come into office, they need substantive policy experts to help them do their jobs. And for instance, so I know that at least somewhat DOD, but also with CIA, I know a lot of highly qualified MAGA type operations officers, including myself, but certainly including people of higher rank than me, who have never been called by the Trump administration, even though we have to enact massive reform in these organizations. You can't keep the same people in leadership in these organizations in lower roles. You can't keep the same people who led you down the path that messed the organization up. You can't use those same people to reform the same organization. You've got to bring new people in, whether it's promoting more junior officers or bringing in retirees. You've got to do something like that to affect real change on a much lower level than Hegseth is capable of addressing himself, for example. So I think that's something that we haven't seen yet. On the other hand, my insiders in Washington tell me that because of just the pace of everything that's going on, there is a lot of chaos going on, because basically there are so many things trying to occur at once, that Trump is directing at once. It's difficult on organizations. So perhaps the Hegseth thing may be just like kind of growing pains as the Pentagon tries to reform itself. But I do think that the leaders in the different organizations need to look at bringing in not just 30-year-old conservatives, quote-unquote, who worked at the Heritage Foundation, but people with a lifetime of service and knowledge that that can be appointed to subsidiary roles that will allow people like Hegseth to enact the MAGA agenda.
Well said. And, you know, I couldn't agree more that you kind of need that balance because, you know, you want to bring in people who are who are MAGA, but you also want to have some of the people who have that legacy experience without being part of the deep state or people who would undermine the president's agenda like we saw, frankly, in the first term. And but there does need to be that level of expertise. And so maybe, you know, in the first 6 months, this is the defense secretary kind of getting his feet wet a little bit with some of these top aides. But we hope that some of those personnel decisions will ultimately be made for the best interest of serving the president's agenda. So thanks so much again, Scott Uhlinger, for your commentary. And we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Together, you and I have much to celebrate. Last year, because of your caring help, Preborn rescued over 67,000 babies from abortion. Hi, I'm Dan Steiner, president of Preborn, and I want to thank you for your partnership. Think about what you did. 67,000 little babies are taking their first breath now because of your caring help. Your $28 sponsored one ultrasound that was given to one woman as she was deciding about the future of her baby. Once she saw her precious baby for the first time and heard their sweet baby's heartbeat, the chance of that child living doubled. And Preborn's mission is not only to rescue babies' lives, but also to lead women to Jesus Christ. Last year, we saw 8,900 women receive Christ as Savior. Your help is crucial to continue our life-saving work.
Your caring, tax-deductible gift saves lives. To learn more or donate, visit preborn.com/AFR or dial #250 and say the keyword baby.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, I am looking at a big, beautiful picture of from the White House that apparently was taken last night with President Trump speaking to Congressman Marlon Stutzman from the great state of Indiana, celebrating at the White House the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill. So the congressman joins me now. And sir, looking good. And what did President Trump have to say to you?
Well, great to be with you, Jenna. You know, we were talking about, he asked me, he said, how are things going in Indiana? And I was just sharing with him that we're doing a job fair this next week, and we have over 60 companies there, and already 1,600 job openings that companies are looking for labor to fill those jobs or career opportunities for individuals. And so he was in a very good mood last night. He was talking about the trade deals that he was able to accomplish yesterday, and we talked a little bit about just our farm and the exciting things that are happening across the country. And of course, I just, thanked him again for his service, because I truly believe that he's not only, saving America from socialism and Marxism, but he's also just such a strong leader when it comes to economic policy and fighting back those that want to destroy America.
Yeah, absolutely. And, he and the White House, of course, just this week are celebrating 6 months of his second term in office. And there's been a lot of commentary on what he has done in those 6 months and then what to look forward to in the next 3.5 years. What's your view of the scorecard of the first 6 months as it relates to the executive branch, but then also to Congress? Because that's been a lot of the criticism, is that Congress isn't moving as swiftly to codify some of those significant wins in the executive orders. So does Congress have a little bit of catching up to do and, maybe stay in town and work over the August recess?
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you, so, obviously the president does move very quickly. And, as I was just talking with a couple of other colleagues yesterday, and a friend who has been in Washington for quite some time, she said she's never seen anything like this Trump administration. And we were talking about the space, of over the last 8 years that President Trump, and I still believe that the 2016 election was actually the biggest election of my lifetime, because Trump beating Hillary kept Hillary from appointing three liberal Supreme Court justices. Trump starts to lay the groundwork for this Trump administration. And of course, as you know, now we're starting to hear even more out of the administration of what Obama's nefarious actions were during the Russia hoax and the Russia collusion, trying to keep Trump from winning. And then so we lose the election in 2020, and now Trump is back. But during those 8 years, in and out, Trump now understands Washington so much better. And he has a cabinet team that is incredible and is cleaning up federal government. And he's now just got this great momentum, and he's moving so much faster than Congress is. And Congress is designed to move slowly. It's not designed to move as quick as the executive branch is. And so, I would argue that we've actually accomplished a lot in Congress. Especially with the Big Beautiful Bill, where we had 38 executive orders in the Big Beautiful Bill, rescissions package, the crypto bills, and of course, dealing with the border and immigration. Those are all big, big items that we've been able to package together. So I would say that, President Trump, he got right out of the gate and working on these in executive orders, and then we came along, the methodical, slower approach from Congress, which is frustrating at times, but it's also good as well, because we don't want Congress to be able to move so fast that they overreact, which they tend to do in so many ways. I'm not trying to defend Congress here a lot, but I think with Speaker Mike Johnson's leadership, we've been able to put so much of President Trump's policy into law. And so I think give President Trump an A+, because he's accomplished more in 6 months than what any president has probably ever accomplished in the United States.
I agree with that assessment for sure. And to follow up on a couple of the items that you mentioned, we were speaking in the first segment about the DNI report about former President Obama and the 2016 election and that referral from DNI Tulsi Gabbard to the Department of Justice for potentially a follow-up investigation. Is Congress poised to do its own investigation into that report?
I believe so. In fact, that was something that President Trump mentioned last night, and is pretty clear. In fact, Tulsi Gabbard was there, and they were just communicating back and forth there in the room while he was speaking. And she seems to be very certain that there is issues here and that there's more to come. You know, my assumption is that there's going to be a lot of calls from Congress for investigations and hearings on this. And, you know, and this is the thing, Jenna, is we have to follow the law. This is the difference between Republicans and Democrats. Democrats make things up and will try to, and exactly what we saw here with this Russia collusion hoax, is that they make things up for political purposes. Republicans, we have to follow the law. And if the evidence is there, and if they broke the law, there has to be consequences. And that's the thing. I think what's happened over the last 8 years, Democrats truly do have Trump derangement syndrome, and they let that blind themselves, and they were willing to do anything to keep him from winning office. And now they find themselves, they're going to find themselves in a lot of trouble, not only with the electors and with the electorate, because they lost the elections in 2024, but now, you know, they also have a trail of impropriety and illegal activity that could come back to haunt them as well. And also, just like we saw with Joe Biden and the fact that there was the massive cover-up of his ability to be the president, and we had an auto pen as the president, and Joe Biden wasn't in charge of it.
Yeah, that is another huge issue that needs to be looked into, and whether those pardons were void or voidable as a matter of law, if that auto pen and my thought on it, just from a legal perspective, it's not so much the actual use of an auto pen itself; it's whether or not the then sitting president Joe Biden was the one who gave that order and actually exercised his authority as the president, because he can't just staff that out. And so is that something that may be a subject of a congressional investigation as well? And is that poised to go further? Because I think it's a very significant legal question for sure. But also there should be accountability for people like Dr. Fauci and others who were part of the whole COVID narrative.
Yes. No. And I think that, you know, as we start dealing with the Biden administration, I think that's going to start uncovering things that happened, of course, under Fauci and now under the Obama administration. And, you know, as we watch these cabinet members who are just finally getting into settled into their posts, you know, also there's so much activity at the beginning trying to, you know, get a hold of the issues of the day, but then as they get settled in and they can start digging backwards, I think that's what's happening here with Tulsi Gabbard, is that now she's getting access. The other thing too that happens, and I've had frequently stories where presidential appointments for Trump are assigned to a department, and the entrenched bureaucrats who've been there for years and years just simply don't cooperate, and they're just going to wait them out. And I think this maybe the time is a little bit different now this time, because, you know, Tulsi Gabbard knows how Washington, D.C. works. Lee Zeldin, he knows how Washington works. So these cabinet members are much further ahead than maybe what others were the first administration, and now they can start asking the questions and forcing the bureaucrats to give answers, because I'll tell you, the fourth branch of government, the bureaucracy in Washington, is truly, I believe, the enemy of the people in some cases, because they hide information from Congress. They hide information from the executive branch. They hide information from the American people. And that's why they can't stand President Trump. I always am reminded, when you look at the election in 2024 and you look at the District of Columbia election on president, President Trump only won 6% of the D.C. residents' vote, and Kamala Harris won like 92%. And so it just tells you that the District of Columbia is entrenched with government, people that believe in the government and want the Democrats to be in charge of the federal government.
And I'm speaking with Congressman Marlon Stutzman from Indiana's 3rd District. And do you think that this Congress, under the leadership of Speaker Johnson, will have the same kind of political will and resolve to issue contempt referrals if some of these who are subpoenaed, these bureaucrats and Obama associates and, you know, others who were in the Biden White House as well, related to the auto pin issue, if they just simply refuse their subpoenas or they delay? I mean, we saw that, of course, with Steve Bannon and Peter Navarro, who went all the way to convictions and jail time for declining to show up. And so it seems like, you know, they were some of the first to actually go that far. But will this Congress similarly say, well, you know, no, this isn't an option? I mean, you have a constitutionally protected right to sit in the chair and, you know, take the Fifth or other options as lawyers may advise. But you can't just simply ignore a validly issued subpoena to from Congress.
Yeah, no, I think this Congress, you know, this this leadership in Congress, you have chairmen like Jim Jordan, James Comer, others, that if we're going to be the party of law and order, we have to follow that. We have to be that example of following law and order. And if there is criminal activity, we need to follow the facts wherever they lead. And, you know, there doesn't need to be anything made up like the Democrats. The Democrats like to make it up. And then, but in this case, I believe that Republicans are going to just follow the evidence. And I think in their efforts to derail President Trump and Republicans, I think that they have very likely left a trail that's messy and could come back to haunt some of them. And so I think that the Republican Party is very resolved to clean up whatever mess is left. And if there is criminal activity, that there be consequences for that. You know, this is going to be very interesting over the next 6 months, especially because there's so much, whether it's Biden, whether it's Obama now, whether it's the, you know, Fauci and others within the Biden and Obama administrations, the cleanup is unbelievable. It's being done in so many ways, whether it's economically, whether it's on the border. The cleanup is massive, but now I think as we truly get settled in here over the next 6 months, the evidence that has been left, and I'm sure they tried to hide it. I'm sure there's a lot of you know, paper that was shredded over the past right there at the beginning of the year after the election to try to hide this. But you know, even look at what Hunter Biden, his rant this past week, again, just shows you the core of the Democrat Party. And and of course, you know, the new mayor that they elect up in New York, candidate on the Democrat side, is just a flat out socialist Marxist and is already saying he's not going to follow the laws that we have here in the United States. And so this again shows the heart of the Democrat Party, and I hope that's what people see, is that you know, their heart is not for good, and that we as Republicans, we need to be, again, the party of law and order and follow the evidence that we find and is very obvious to us as Americans, and that there needs to be consequences for that.
Yeah, and do what the Bible requires for the institution of government, which is to promote good and restrain evil. And you mentioned Representative Stutzman about the candidate, Democrat candidate in New York City, Zoran Mamdani. And you posted this on X that he must be removed from the ballot immediately. He calls to stand in the way of federal law enforcement and to install a socialist economic system in New York City, and that flies in the face of the oath he took when becoming a New York State Assemblyman. So is there, I mean, we saw again, you know, the lawfare that was targeting Trump to try to misuse and abuse the 14th Amendment's text to remove Trump from the ballot. Ultimately, the Supreme Court upheld his process right to remain on the ballot. Is there a different argument in your view for removing this candidate?
Well, you know, part of my objective is, and you know, I've got a lot of friends up there in New York City that are great conservative Republicans that are fighting the fight in very dangerous territory, especially considering, you know, Mamdani's election now. But what I hope is that the people in New York City who are going to cast their ballots are familiar with what he has said and what he has done already and what he plans to do. I mean, he did take an oath as a New York State Assemblyman that he would uphold the U.S. Constitution. I mean, when I was a state representative in Indiana, you know, I took an oath to not only uphold the Indiana Constitution, but the American Constitution as well. And so for him to come out on the campaign trail and to say that he is going to violate the law and basically, you know, stick a finger in the eye of the American Constitution, I don't believe he's should be eligible for the ballot. But if, you know, he'll very likely stay on the ballot because I don't believe the Democrat Party is going to do anything about it. But we should at least make the point to the New York City voters that here is a mayor of the largest city in the United States, one of the great cities in the world, that we're going to have a socialist Marxist and somebody who says blatantly that he is not going to uphold the laws of the United States and he's not going to cooperate or even work with. I mean, there can be differences between a mayor and the president. I understand that. But when you start to shelter and hide killers and rapists in your city and put your own American citizens in danger, that is where those questions need to be asked. And I hope that the electorate in New York City realizes that's the direction he wants to go before it's too late. But I would still argue that he should still be removed from the ballot because of his comments.
Yeah, well said. We have to take a break here. Congressman Marlon Stutzman, thank you so much for joining on these issues and seeing the next 6 months and the next 3.5 years of President Trump's term and how Congress can help. And as we move forward into the midterms, I mean, all this conversation about the mayoral election and all that is just further indication why elections have consequences, elections matter, and we need to ensure that good candidates are on the ballot and then those candidates are the ones that are ultimately elected to office so that we don't get these types of people who are completely antithetical to the worldview that America was founded on and the appropriate oath of office and the fidelity and dedication to our justice system and our system in America, even our economic system. I mean, to advance socialism is just fundamentally un-American. So anyway, you can follow Rep. Marlon Stutzman at Rep. Marlon Stutzman. We will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, speaking of the Otto Penn presidency controversy, that is just beginning, according to a writer in Real Clear Politics. He says that now that investigations into the Otto Penn presidency are underway, left-leaning media and Democrat politicians are finally confronted with the truth that was right in front of our faces for years. Joe Biden was not running the country, and America was being led by an unelected, unaccountable Politburo. Every week we learn more that makes the long national nightmare we endured even worse. Now, thanks to the New York Times of all places, we learn that Joe Biden couldn't even manage the task of signing his own name on pardons of violent and dangerous criminals, and at best only knew of categories of those being pardoned. But Biden was forced to bow out, of course, out of his campaign when he embarrassed himself and the political class and media elite on the June 27th debate. But now the House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer announced that the Republican National Lawyers Association policy conference in May that he was determined to conduct full investigations to get to the truth for the American people. So let's welcome in Gerard Folletti, who is senior counsel for the Lawfare Project. Gerard, welcome back. And you know, this is a very serious issue, and it's, in my view, it's not that the Otto Penn itself was used, which has been used in prior presidencies, just to, you know, have that sort of signature, almost like a stamp that, you know, as a former clerk for various judges, you know, before I went to law school and all of that, we would stamp the judges' name on certain documents that he didn't actually physically sign himself, and that was fine. But that was when the order and authority actually came from the judge. It wasn't the clerk making the determination whether or not to use the judge's name in, you know, in grant or deny these various orders. And so to me, it's a matter legally of whether or not Biden actually exercised his own authority, or whether his staffers were using that authority and that cannot be delegated from the actual person and office of the president. Do you agree with that? And where do you see this potentially going? I mean, what kind of evidence would we need to make these pardons either void or voidable as a matter of law?
I think you're absolutely right. The issue is not really the legality of the auto pen. We have to remember that President Obama did sign into law the expanded use of the auto pen as an expansion of the Patriot Act. So the use of the auto pen itself is not really the issue. The problem is, the predicament is, we never really treated seriously the mental competency of the man who's signing, of Joe Biden. And because of that, we're left with questions on whether he knew what he was signing and whether he himself was authorizing that signature. This came to light at several times during his presidency. Well, one example was when he was asked by the Speaker of the House about the natural gas deal with Europe and why that wasn't fulfilled, and President Biden said he never signed it, which he had. So that started the questioning on what he knew, what President Biden knew about what was being done in his name. And that's really the big question that these congressional hearings and the investigations are looking into. It's, in blunt terms, whether President Biden was competent to sign into law certain things, or whether he was competent when he issued those pardons. And it's a tough question, because we've never had this in the context of orders or pardons. We've had the 25th Amendment to determine the competence of the president to be president, but not to challenge his acts. So this is somewhat uncharted territory in American history.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see where this goes and what kind of inquiry now, of course, as it's getting later and later after the fact. But we also have, you know, the testimony in the Hur report that Biden wasn't competent to even mount a defense at his own trial. And, you know, if that would have come in. So there's a declination to prosecute in the instance of holding on to some of those classified documents. I mean, there seems to be a lot of contemporaneous evidence that would suggest that Biden was not competent even well before the use of the auto pen for those orders. But you mentioned as well that Speaker Johnson revealed to a journalist, Bari Weiss, on her podcast in January 2025 that, and his quotation was, President Biden has not been in charge for some time. And that to me raises the question, why didn't the Speaker of the House go forward with that when Biden was still in office? I mean, why wait till after the fact to be like, yeah, we knew that, and we're even the opposition party, I'm the Speaker of the House, but, you know, we just kind of let that one go because, hey, his own cabinet won't do anything about it, so, you know, meh. I mean, that seems like a perhaps not fulfilling his own duty to the American people.
Well, I think he does have to, I think Speaker Johnson does have to answer a few questions about that. But ultimately, it's not on the Speaker of the House or on anyone outside of the cabinet to raise issues on the president's competency. That's not how the 25th Amendment is supposed to work. And that's really what we would have been talking about at that time, whether or not there were discrete inquiries. That remains to be seen. But ultimately, we really need to look at the people within the Biden White House, people who took oaths to protect and support the Constitution, as to whether they were in a position to know what was going on and why they didn't say anything, why they didn't challenge or raise issues with the president's doctor. And quite frankly, we don't know whether or not they did, because we have the doctors taking the Fifth Amendment. So the issue is not so much Speaker Johnson. It's why the Biden team itself hid the truth about his decline. And with Speaker Johnson, it's understandable. You may want to excuse someone for not remembering one thing, but the pattern would have been visible to the people around President Biden, to the people in the White House who work with him on a daily basis. So the better question is, why were they not forthcoming, and why didn't they raise flags or concerns about the president's health?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right on that. I'm speaking with Gerard Folletti, who's senior counsel at the Lawfare Project. You can follow him on X at Gerard Folletti. That in terms of the 25th Amendment, that power resides with the cabinet. But at least from a PR and media standpoint, I mean, we're seeing how much pressure there is on Attorney General Pam Bondi and the whole, you know, Epstein files debacle just because of the media, nothing else. And if Speaker Johnson and perhaps others, other Republicans on Capitol Hill had been more forthcoming to the media about their own observations and concerns, then it may have forced the cabinet to have to contemporaneously reply and defend why they're not making any action pursuant to the 25th Amendment. So it seems to me just odd that something like that, that isn't even really political. I mean, it goes to national security, it goes to some of these legal questions like the pardons that he issued. I mean, it goes to, is the legislation that he signed during that time valid? I mean, you know, a lot of these are very serious questions that they wouldn't have raised that at the time, even if they themselves didn't have any power under the 25th Amendment.
You're absolutely right. And I think that what we will see here, why these hearings are important, is not so much to point fingers and to attribute blame, but to develop some sort of a policy or some sort of a procedure going forward where this is laid out, where there is a process by which people can raise concerns and these concerns can be addressed, whether it's the president or some other member of government, that they are not fully there, not fully competent, or not well enough to be able to execute their office. And I think that's what we will see here, is how that can be meaningfully done, what the recommendations are going forward, so that there is perhaps a periodic review, so that people may know in isolation they have concerns, but when those concerns are not shared, when those concerns are not centralized, then they're ignored. And that may be what happened here, at least from the outside. We really do have to look at the insiders, because we have to wonder how long President Biden's decline had been evident to them. So really, I think that what we will hope to see here is some sort of a process or framework for evaluating the mental acuity of the president and other high office holders.
Yeah, really well said. And in just the last few minutes that we have with you, I wanted to get your commentary as well, just from a legal perspective, on the DNI's referral of Obama and his associates with this report and the Russia collusion hoax. And now, just breaking in the last segment, Representative Stutzman said that Congress is going to open its own investigation. They're poised to do that, issue subpoenas. And so where do you see that going legally? And, you know, the politics aside, where should this go if there is evidence now in this report? I mean, obviously, we've known for a while the Steele dossier is bogus, the hoax, all of that. But if this was knowing criminal activity from whether it's Obama himself or any of his associates, any of those former office holders, where should this investigation go specifically with the Department of Justice?
The really frustrating thing here is that there may well have been criminality, but we may not actually address it fully because of statute of limitations issues. So I think that we will see an investigation, a thorough investigation by the Justice Department. I think they will take up the referral from the office of the DNI. I think we'll also see the parallel congressional investigations. But when you look at the realm of charges that could be levied, whether it's conspiracy against the United States, conspiracy against civil rights, Espionage Act violations, the only one that's really not subject to a five-year statute of limitations is treason. And that's a harder case to make than other charges. You need a much more showing of intent, of proof, of damage, of all the collusion that happened. And it'll be very difficult with that to go after, for example, President Obama. We've seen last year's rulings on presidential immunity from the Supreme Court that may very well impact the ability to bring those charges. But I think that we are definitely going to see an investigation, and this will raise a lot of political questions about how the Justice Department operates within an administration to investigate things that may be politically sensitive and point a negative light on the office holders of that administration, because 5 years is not long enough. Maybe we need to have an expansion of the statute of limitations for some of these offenses, because right now we're talking about things that would be time barred for prosecution, and that's concerning.
Yeah, absolutely. That seems, especially when the political cycle of a presidential administration is 4 years, and then the Senate even is, you know, is six with some of this. But when we're looking at that political calculation, then 5 years does seem to give the ability for some of these things to just slip really quickly under that statute of limitations. And so that should be addressed by this Congress and swiftly. That seems like a very, very short statute of limitations, especially when you're talking about crimes or alleged crimes of this magnitude. So Gerard Folletti, really appreciate that. Really interesting analysis. And thank you so much. So again, you can follow Gerard Folletti and the Lawfare Project on X. And as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net. And make sure that you are tuning in this week for On Demand. It drops every Friday. My special guest this week will be my good friend, Dinesh D'Souza. And we are going to be reviewing President Trump's first 6 months. So really excited for what he has to say. That will drop this Friday. And before that, you can listen to every other episode of On Demand at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.